John Williams here, producer Pete, and Elise Glink is on the line. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. What's going on here, Elise?
It's such a scary day in the market. I know that everybody is out there going, I kind of thought I was going to be able to retire soon, and now maybe never. And that is, it's always scary when you see the Dow Jones drop by, 1,000 points or so. But we're doing a lot better. Just start with some relatively silver lining-ish stuff. Asia had a dreadful day. The Nikkei was down 12.5%, which is just a frightening number. But there's some reasons going on here, John, that I think we should talk through, just because it's really not as bad as it was. Like, I keep seeing, it could be 2008, or it could be 1999, or it could be 1987 all over again. I think we're okay. I think we're doing better than those years.
What's happened?
Well, a couple of things. So we did get some okay news on Friday that only 144,000 jobs were created last month. Now, that was below what they expected, which was something around 187,000 jobs. But if you look back over the last 4 years, we have been creating jobs every single month, month in and month out. And the 144,000 wasn't even the lowest. But it seemed to have sparked a little, are we actually going to have a hard landing or a soft landing? Because last week, remember, we talked about this. The Federal Reserve came out and said, you know what? Things are moving in the direction. We're almost back to 2% employment. Probably going to reduce, interest rates going forward.
2% inflation, you mean?
2% inflation, of course, yeah. and nothing to worry about. We're getting there, but some things have been happening around the world that made everybody very, very nervous all of a sudden, and a lot of it has to do with what's going on in Japan. So the Nikkei, which is Japan's stock market, right? It as I said, it dropped a tremendous amount today, but there's some things going on that are called carry trades. And carry trades happen when you borrow cheaply in one country, and then you sell, or you sell in one you borrow one place, and then you invest in a place that has a higher interest rate, right?
Oh.
In this case, there are a whole lot of people out there, not me, but a lot of other people, who have borrowed cheaply in yen, right, the Japanese currency, which has been trading at an extraordinarily low level. And last week, at the end of the week, the Japanese government moved to support the yen. They want to raise the price of the yen, basically. And then people would borrow in yen, and then they buy higher-yielding currencies like Mexican pesos or dollars. This is not for the faint of heart. This is day trading in currencies. And so what's happened is there was such an imbalance that the Japanese government seems to have, they stepped in last week, and that has thrown everybody's calculation who does this kind of investing off, and we're all feeling the repercussions of this.
Mm. So it's not just that the unemployment rate went up to 4.3% in the U.S.
No, and I'd like to reassure everybody, 4.3% is still really low. It's not 3.5%, which is like a 50-year low, right? But it's still a very reasonable unemployment rate. And most of the reason why that went up is that more people, hundreds of thousands of people, finally came back into the workforce. So since the pandemic, the workforce has been a little light, right? People in the pandemic were like, 50 million people lost their jobs. I'm going to go back to school. I'm just going to stay home and raise my kids. I'm going to stay home and play video games, right? People just left the workforce. Well, they've been coming back. And they're coming back because there's 8 million jobs to fill and salaries are going up. And they're thinking, well, it's now worth my time to actually look for a job. And so when they come back into the market, that just means that there are more people available who are now considered unemployed than were considered unemployed before, because they weren't really looking for a job, but now they are. And so they count into it. And that's a big reason why that jumped up to 4.3% from 4.1% is where I think it was.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink's on the line. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Dow's off about 960 points right now. Other industries are similarly off. She's talking to us a little bit about what's going on out there, explain the sort of international money trading that matters, and also some domestic numbers that spooked people. I mean, I wonder if the dust settles on this and we pick up 900 points by the week's end. Is that possible, or is something really seismic happened here?
I think we could pick up those 900 points tomorrow, right? I mean, we've seen this before where the market drops a couple of times, 1,000 points for a variety of reasons, and then the next day or 2 days later, it's back. I'd like to reassure everybody that even in the worst of, you know, the trades, like in 1987, where the Dow lost 25% of its value in one really horrible Monday in October 1987, within the next, I think it was year or two, it had come all the way back. It's happened even faster over the last, you know, few years, 15 years. It's only taken less than a year to come back, some cases less than 4 months. And if you look at where the markets are, and I want to answer your question about what some economists think needs to be done, John, but, you know, if you look at where we are today, you know, the Dow, certainly, it's down 2.5%, but year to date, still up 9.1%. I'm sorry, that's the S&P 500 up 9.1%. The Dow up 2.84%, almost 3% year to date. And, you know, when you look at NASDAQ, same thing's true. You know, it's still up year to date. I want everybody to just sort of take a deep breath and think about that, because where we started in January, which was up after a big year last year, you're going to have to expect, you know, these markets to have some sort of volatility. Now, what should we do going forward? Because to your point, a lot of the world now thinks that we're headed in the United States, which has had a better economy than any other developed country. Now people think, well, maybe we're going to have a hard landing, not a soft landing. And Jeremy Siegel, who's a noted economist, wants the Fed to lower interest rates by 0.75% right now on an emergency basis, and he wants another one in September. And I read that story, and I thought he thinks that the sky is falling, and we're going to have a massive recession. And then you get some other noted economists who think, well, it's not so bad. They probably do need to lower it, maybe by, instead of, you know, 0.25%, maybe we need to lower it by 0.5%. If I were a betting person, and I'm not, but if I were, I'd probably think the Fed is trying to decide between 0.25% and 0.5% now for September. They don't want to spook everybody. If they just emergency basis lowered it by 0.75%, I think everybody would be really freaked out, and I think you would see the 1,000 points down turn to 2,000 points. But I think the Fed is taking the longer view that things aren't bad in the United States right now. They're pretty darn good. We have a pretty good growth rate going on. A lot of jobs. People are looking for jobs. They're probably not looking to see any big moves right now.
Fed was criticized previously for waiting too long to move. And many of our guests on the Wintrust Business Lunch the last few weeks have been saying, don't wait until you hit your benchmark. Anticipate the momentum or market forces are going to get you there, and lower interest rates sooner rather than later. I wonder if people are going to start to judge the Fed for its timing.
Or of course.
Of course, right? But also, maybe the inaction by the Fed is not the reason that the markets are down across the world right now.
I don't think it is. I think you would have, you know, here are the odd reasons that markets go crazy. It was also announced last week that Warren Buffett, arguably the world's greatest businessman, I have nothing but respect for Mr. Buffett, he sold half of his Apple shares, right? Over the last few months, he has sold, not he personally, his people have liquidated 50% of their stock portfolio in Apple. And they now have $200 billion in cash. So you could argue that that alone would spook the markets. What do they know about Apple that the rest of us don't know about Apple? And what are they thinking? And or did they just think, well, we'll take some profits here. We'll keep, you know, half of our shares, and we're going to be primed because we think, you know, maybe they had some insight into what was happening in Japan with the, you know, currency and the yen. All of these things come into play, and the average investor, you know, like me, like you, John, we have no idea what the actual trigger is, and we're not in a position to take advantage of it. So all I want to say to people is, if you're thinking about selling because you think the sky is falling, hang tight. It's not falling, at least not for you. You don't have any losses until you sell. And then you have losses, but you don't have any losses until you sell. let's wait and see what happens over the next year.
Okay, that's Elise Glink, Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. You also have a new weekly newsletter, right?
I do. It's called Love, Money, and Real Estate. And I talk about all these kinds of things and also some things going on in the real estate market. Feel free to sign up. It's at thinklink.com.
Thinklink.com. Elise Glink joins us most Mondays. All right, Elise, let's talk next week. Thanks for your help today.
You bet, John.
I think a lot of us can relate to the idea that on a given Saturday night, you think everybody else is having more fun than you're having, and so you don't want to call them because you don't want to bug them. And it turns out they're sitting at home wishing somebody would call as well. I think a lot of us can relate to that. But there's also something to think about the feeling of isolation that families and adults have post-pandemic. We all went into a dark place, and the emergence of that has only been slow in coming. I heard a story this morning that only 25% of the students in the Chicago area are back up to skill level where they should be. And most efficient are we in math and science, by the way. I guess that's no big surprise. But the point is, the effects of all of this really linger. Angela Hall joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the co-founder of something called Family Friendly App. Yeah, there's an app for this. And Angela's here to tell us about it. Angela, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
So this it's an app, so people across the country and world have access to it, but you are trying to get people from the Chicago area to log on. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have launched an app called Family Friend. And as you were describing, a lot of parents have been feeling isolation, whether it stems from the pandemic or they may be first-time recent parents. As a new parent, there's a lot that goes on you. You have a lot of responsibilities. And now having to foster new activities, new resources for your child can be very daunting. So we created a new platform called Family Friend, where we are hoping to connect other families that are in a similar phase of life to find other people in their network and build community. So whether that's based on your children's schools, their ages, your neighborhood, the activities that you're a part in, we want to help you find people to really help foster and build community and really help people who have been feeling isolated in this journey of parenthood.
And to be clear, Family Friend app is the name of the app, and that's the link, familyfriend.app. So would you have invented or promoted this app if there had not been a pandemic? It seems to me like some of those reasons to get the app existed beforehand. Mm-hmm. They're just more acute post-pandemic.
I feel like this was something that is needed pre, post, even if there wasn't a pandemic. This feeling of needing community when you are having a child. And I'm a new parent. I just had a child. He's 15 months now. However, during the pandemic, I had so many family members who had children, and now they had to become teachers. Now they had to become their activity leaders. Now they had to figure out how to create community for their kids. And so it was definitely exacerbated during that time. But because I am a new mom, I felt a lot of those pressures. I felt that I needed to find a new community that could relate to the experiences that I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. I had to find new doctors. I had to find new activities that I was not thinking about, restaurants that are good for newborns, things like that. And so it would have been nice to have something that can curate not just a community, but also make suggestions on events that would fit the needs of my new family. So definitely this is something that is needed pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, but it really highlighted for me during that time that there was a lack of support for parents.
So then describe for us your ideal user. Would it be a young parent then, or a parent of young children?
It would be a parent of any age, because I feel while I am a new parent, one of my co-founders, their kids are much older. And we also have people, all of our founders have children of a variety of ages, whether they're in middle school, they're just starting elementary school. And even I have a sister who is an empty nester, and she is now wanting to meet other people who are empty nesters, and how are they dealing with sending their kids off to college? And so the ideal person for a family friend is an individual who is wanting to connect to another parent that's in another phase, that is in the same phase of life as them. So whether you are a first-time parent and you're wanting to get advice as far as what diapers are you using, or pediatricians in the area, or maybe you are a parent whose kids are now in sports and you want to know what baseball leagues are best in the area. Or like I said, my sister, who's that empty nester, wanting to connect with other parents who are dealing with those challenges of moving their kids out of the home.
Sure.
And so we're really wanting to connect to all parents that are in any phase of life.
I would imagine the transplants would especially appreciate something like this, because it's just so hard when you move into a new community. But then what happens? I log on, I open up the app. What do I see? Do I click boxes of areas of interest or need? What do I do?
Yeah, so you'll log on and you will be able to create a profile for you as an individual, but you'll also be able to create a profile for your family. So you'll be able to say, hi, this is the Hall family. You know, we're living in Naperville, parents of 3 and a 5-year-old. We have these interests. Our kids are in this ages. And I'll be able to make a profile as an individual mom, and my husband will be able to create a profile as an individual father. So while we will be able to have our own connections and discussions, if I'm looking for other moms or if he's looking for other dads, we can also get on there as a family unit, and people will be able to see the Halls as a whole. And this is not just an app specifically for moms or an app specifically for dads. It's an app for the whole family.
So then would other families reach out to your family and say, hey, do you want to have a play date? Or are you just going to find resources for them and they can go to Park XYZ? Are you connecting families? Do they interact with each other?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you're creating that profile, you'll be able to put your interests. You'll be able to say what neighborhood you're in. You'll be able to really describe who you are and things that you're looking for. And then we are able to match you to other families that are in similar areas, that have similar interests, that may have kids at similar ages as well. And so you'll be able to connect with those individuals. You'll be able to chat with those individuals. You'll be able to schedule, like you said, play dates and all of that great stuff. But we also have forums on the platform. And so we have ongoing discussions based on even if it's on your neighborhood and what's happening, different events, or we have some forums that are more discussion based. So one of the things, even though I have a 15-month-old figuring out school systems in Chicago, has been something that has been on my mind. And so we're able to have a forum on Family Friend where people can give tips and tricks about navigating, you know, the school system or just a variety of things that you go through as a parent. So, but that's the first iteration. We right now are really, really focused on getting as many parents on the platform as possible to connect, to join those discussion boards. But as we continue to grow, we will be having more tailored experiences for people who are looking for specific businesses, events, suggestions, and we'll be able to curate exactly what they're looking for and make suggestions based on their needs as well.
Well, I just picked up my phone and typed in Family Friend in the App Store, and you were the second thing that came up. It's pretty clear who you are and what it is. There's no there's no concern about that. It's very easy to get, and it's free as well, right?
Free. Okay. 100%. Yes. Parents, we pay for enough. This is free.
And it's new. It's called Family Friend, and it's an app that's everywhere. Angela Hall is the co-founder. Angela, good luck. It's nice to meet you. Let's stay in touch
Thank
on this.
You. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based snackmaker Kellanova could be gobbled up soon by the Mars Candy Company. Mars is considering an acquisition of Kellanova, the spinoff of Kellogg. It became its own company a year ago after a separation from Kellogg's cereal operations. Kellanova brands include Pringles, Cheez-It, and Pop-Tarts. The company's shares shot up nearly 20% after the news broke. Analysts say the acquisition would help Mars diversify its portfolio, which is heavily based on chocolate products. It could also help Mars grow in international markets. The Wall Street Journal says a deal could value Kellanova at $30 billion. Mars is headquartered in McLean, Virginia. Chicago foundations had a good year last year. Cranes reports the city's largest foundations had asset growth of nearly 8% following a decline of 13% a year earlier. The report says the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Chicago Community Trust, and the Jewish Federation of Chicago held the first, second, and third positions among local foundations. The Brinson Foundation jumped from 24th to 13th after a 78% increase in assets. The 25 foundations on the list employed more than 1,200 people and paid out $3 billion in grants last year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And there's a man standing at a podium with something very important to say.
Today, we are announcing that we have purchased a blend of sustainable aviation fuel for use for the very first time at O'Hare International Airport.
That is Bret Hart, president of Chicago's very own United Airlines, claiming bragging rights for being the first carrier to buy sustainable aviation fuel for its jets at O'Hare, meaning your flight could be powered by corn or soybeans.
It sounds like science fiction.
It is not.
The technology's been around for a long time.
But making it is very, very expensive compared to regular jet fuel. United says it's able to afford it now because of something that happened in Springfield. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox.
It's a great day for Illinois. It's a great day for air travel. It's a great day for the future of our planet.
Governor Pritzker is very proud that Illinois became the first state in the Midwest to pass a sustainable aviation fuel tax credit, which United Airlines used. And there were more tax credits coming from Uncle Sam, or Uncle Joe in this case. President Biden's IRA.
Inflation Reduction Act.
That is Susan Stroud, a commodities analyst.
With Noble Ag.
And why the name Noble? Well, she says it's because she tells people
what they need to hear instead of what they want to hear.
And they will hear all about sustainable aviation fuel at a Noble Summit in St. Louis on Thursday. And she says when we think of SAF,
it's most frequently associated with corn ethanol.
But the Inflation Reduction Act contains something special for the soybean group. Growers of America.
There's actually a larger tax credit to be had by using soybean oil versus corn ethanol.
And those tax credits, which spurred United into finding a way to bring SAF to O'Hare,
put us on a new trajectory, especially with the Biden administration's goals of net zero by 2050. So we're just at the beginning of this.
Susan Stroud of Noble Ag, NobleSummit.com. On the food calendar, it's National Oysters Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Shaw's Crab House was described by Chicago Magazine as the number 8 best restaurant in the whole city of Chicago. They wrote at Shaw's Crab House, it's hard to think of a more appealing perch than a bar stool at the adjacent Oyster Bar. Energetic and always packed, the room is humming with people drinking martinis or glasses of Chablis and slurping freshly shucked oysters. Bill Navruz is on a phone line, managing partner over at Shaw's. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing great. And if that description doesn't make you want to come have oysters right now, I don't know what will.
Oh, and by the way, it says at the end of this paragraph, finish with a slice of key lime pie. I'm getting in my car now.
We're waiting for you.
So it's National Oyster Day. This is the day that we promote and shuck oysters. Is that it?
That is 100% correct. We've got a wonderful selection of six oysters for you. We're doing a special on oysters, half price all day until we close. And so, yeah, come on over and enjoy it. Some of that Chablis and some nice oysters.
Is this the one in Schaumburg?
Schaumburg and Chicago, we're both celebrating. So whatever is most convenient for you, whether you're downtown or out in the northwest suburbs, we've got a spot at the bar for you.
Where do the oysters come from?
You know, we have the huge advantage of being in the Midwest and having a great airport like O'Hare, that we get them from the East Coast and the West Coast. So we always carry a selection of both. Today we have three from the East Coast and three from the West Coast.
And then what's the art to? I mean, you actually sent over some tools and some oysters. Thank you very much. But what's the art of consuming these things?
Well, I think it all starts with you have to have a fresh oyster. And once you learn how to shuck them, even a poorly shucked oyster is delicious, but a well-shucked oyster is special. And so fresh oyster, shucked well, and then there's a thousand ways to enjoy it after that. My favorite way is just a little dash of hot sauce. But if spicy is not your thing, a little squeeze of lemon, or just eat it plain. They taste great on their own.
Somebody sent over, I guess it was you all, a chainmail hand glove. I have a glove on that's made of like a metal netting.
Peter, we're trying to limit the liability of you shucking an oyster. So we gave you all the necessary tools to stay safe. I do recommend that chainmail glove if you're a beginner. When I shuck oysters, I don't use one, but I assume my risk myself.
This thing is awesome. And so the business of oysters, how does that do? Like, I could eat Chinese, I could eat Italian, I could eat a steak downtown. Where in the continuum of, say, popular food items are oysters?
You know, I think oysters are, in the past has been a niche item, but is growing in popularity. And I think that, you know, I have four kids under the age of 15 that eat oysters as regularly as I ate pizza when I was a kid. So I think that they are becoming more and more popular. And it's just a wonderful way to start out any meal, whether it be a seafood meal, a steak, pasta. It's just a nice way to start a meal, I think.
Yeah. So is it a special? I mean, I know you're promoting it. Is there half price on the oysters today?
Yeah. So half price all day long. So just come on in and we'll set you up. And it's half price oysters. It's a great way to have a bunch of oysters if you're an oyster lover. But it's also a wonderful way to try them out for the first time, to come in and sit at the bar and have just a few to see if you to ease yourself into the oyster world.
Do you chew them or do you swallow them?
You know, I personally like to, I slurp the oyster in, I give it one chew or so, and then swallow the rest. I've seen people that, you know, their strategy is to swallow it whole, and others that, you know, chew it like they would any other food. It's a personal thing, very much a personal thing.
Till 9 o'clock tonight in Schaumburg and downtown Chicago. National Oyster Day, where else but at Shaw's Crab House. Okay, nice to talk to you, Bill. Have a great day. Have a great season.